All right, we're going to get started in about a minute. So if there's anything you need to wrap up, just get that going, and then we'll jump right into it. Unless you guys are ready to get started now, then I'll just get started. All right, let's do it. So first off, I want to thank everybody for coming. This is, as you can tell, a pretty packed house, which we're pretty excited about. A lot of people, unfortunately, had to be turned away. But my understanding is a lot of these things will be recorded, so they'll be available later on. How many of you here are from the Seattle area before we even get started? Okay, so we have a few people. How many people from the East Coast? Quite a few, okay. West Coast or Midwest? All right, outside the USA? Oh, quite a few people, okay. Well, cool, well, welcome. As you know, today is Halloween. So don't worry, this isn't part of the official program. This isn't what's new in Visual Studio 2012, but I brought a few candies. I obviously did not bring enough, so we'll have these here. So that'll be part of the treat for today. And the other thing that I brought in as well is we have these very cool I Love Visual Studio stickers that you can stick onto your laptops. And I think I might have enough for everybody. So I'll leave those up at front. And then afterwards, definitely feel free to stop by and grab some and stick them on your laptops and tell everybody how awesome this product is. Because at least that's how I feel about it. So let's jump into it. So today's session is, what's new in Visual Studio 2008? We've invented this time warp, and we've gone back in time. OK, I'm just kidding. That's a lame joke. Just warming you guys up. You know, I know it's been a long day. This is all about what's new in Visual Studio 2010. My name is Orville McDonald. I'm a product manager on the product. My name is actually Orville McDonald. That's not a joke. So, oh, I said 2010? Oh, oops, sorry. OK. That was actually a mistake. So you caught me on that one. Let's see if we can get it right this time. So this is what's new in Visual Studio 2012. Good, okay, good. Looks like I'm finally getting back on. If I make any more mistakes, let me know. If I say, like, you know, .NET Framework 3.0 or stuff like that. So this is what's new in Visual Studio 2012. I'm a product manager on the product. I'm really excited about Visual Studio. A little quick anecdote about why I'm so excited is that when I first entered computer science, really new to programming, didn't program at all in high school, and to write my assignments, they were written in C++ on Unix machines, using Emacs as my editor. And I must say, it was really daunting. For somebody who was new to programming, trying to figure out pointer manipulation alone was hard, much less having to use just a basic text editor, right? So I'm here, I'm slogging through these assignments, and I'm not even sure how it happened, but somehow I discovered Visual Studio. So I started going in there, and then the IntelliSense started kicking in, and the breakpoints, and then all of a sudden, the language really started to pop and come alive for me. And that's when I realized why people loved programming. Right? Before that, I was like, you gotta be crazy to do this. Then I actually dug into it. And I realized it was truly awesome stuff. So ever since then, I've been hooked. So you're gonna see I'm gonna be really excited. If I'm too excited for you, I apologize. I haven't had coffee. I haven't had any of these candies. I'm just kind of excited about this product. So let's jump straight into it. So we're gonna cover a few things today. And I don't know how many of you saw the Visual Studio launch or some of the other What's New talks at TechEd or any of the other events. We will be touching on some of the same material, so you may have seen some of this stuff before. And I'll save questions for the end, just because there's so many of us, I won't be able to handle them all within the allotted time. But I'll definitely stick around to answer any questions that you may have. The few things that we'll go through, we'll start off with kind of development trends, right? So often when you see a new product, there was a reason why things were built, right? You may sit there and you install Visual Studio, and you're like, well, why in the world did they do that, right? That doesn't really make sense to me. It doesn't fit into kind of my view of the product and what's going on. So I'll talk about some of the trends that we're seeing that were used to influence the product. Then from there, I'll go into modern applications. So application development has changed a lot. It's changed so much, we don't even call them applications anymore. We start calling them apps, right? Things are changing quite a bit, so I'll touch on that. And then also the way we develop. The software methodologies are changing as well, so I'll touch on those things also. And then a few tips on kind of how you could get started with some of the things we're going to talk about today. So if we go into it, so first off, when you take a look at Microsoft as a whole, and you probably noticed this over the keynotes both today and yesterday, there's a wave of innovation coming out of Microsoft right now. Yesterday, you saw the announcement, or not yesterday, but on Monday, you saw the announcement of Windows Phone 8, right? So we're seeing an evolution kind of in our phone platforms. Windows 8 has also been getting a lot of buzz, and we've even gone beyond just the OS as far as even coming up with the hardware when you think about things like Surface. So we have things that come out on these periodic cycles. Visual Studio 2012 launched not too long ago, just back in September, along with Windows Server 2012. So we're seeing a lot of our package software get released. But those aren't the only releases that we tend to do. Also on the services side, you're seeing quite a few things coming out. So if I think within the Visual Studio family, this morning there was an announcement around Team Foundation Service, and I'll actually talk a bit about that as well. Another example of how we could continuously deliver innovations without waiting for like big monolithic releases, products like Bing as well. And kind of why would I talk about all these different products when I think about Visual Studio? Well, the reason why we get a lot of these products isn't necessarily just to have them and install them and to leave them hanging around, right? Like, I don't grab a SQL Server just to say, wow, this is really cool. I have a database sitting on my machine. It's really because we're building applications on top of it. And the thing that we want to make sure is that regardless of the type of apps that you're building, we, in fact, have the right tools and solutions to help you in developing those. And with those, we think that Visual Studio 2012, along with the .NET Framework 4.5, is actually the best way to go and develop your apps. And hopefully at the end of this talk, you'll probably be, or hopefully will be in agreement with me on these things as well. So let's jump into some of the trends, right? Like, what are some of the things that we're seeing that makes us do some of the design decisions that we do? First off, you're seeing consumerization of IT. And can I see a show of hands of how many people have heard this term thrown around? Okay, most of you. And I would say, out of those of you who have heard this term, how many of you know exactly what it means? Okay, fewer hands. So we know that in the software industry and technology in general, there tends to be a tendency to throw a lot of terms out without really defining kind of what they mean, and more importantly, what do they mean for all of you as developers? So when we think of consumerization of IT, the first thing I want to start with is this whole notion of bring your own device, right? So if I rewind back, let's say, even just 10 years ago, right? You went to work for a company, and you got a company-issued computer, right? And more or less, everybody got the same computer, and if they did not get the same computer, it was really within a class of maybe two or three computers. Everything was very standardized. And the great thing about that was that as developers, you knew the exact platform you were developing for. You knew how much RAM it had, how powerful the CPU was, what the display was going to be. So you had a lot of constraints that you could work within that made it very much predictable. Well, we've actually noticed that that has started to change. Now we're seeing people take their regular devices that they have at home and actually bringing them into the workplace and saying, hey, I want to use this. What can you do so that way I could get my work done while using my own personal device? A few things I can note from myself is that whenever I travel, before, if I was to rewind back 5-10 years ago, I'd have my laptop, I'd be looking for like either a Wi-Fi hotspot, or I'd be in my hotel room, and everything was off of that laptop. If I didn't have that laptop, I almost felt naked because it was a full extension of me. Well, now often when I travel, and actually I took it out because I didn't want somebody calling me while I was here talking, but I normally just carry my cell phone, right? And off of my cell phone, I'm able to access my email, I'm able to get some of my corporate documents, and I can actually run everything off of that. But that's my own personal device that I use in my business context as well. And I'm sure many of you could share a similar type of story. And because I'm bringing my own device into the workplace, right, it also brings up this aspect of it being personal, right? Where not only is it like my work life versus my personal life, but they're actually starting to bleed and become one and the same, right? And I'm using the same devices for both things. Kind of an extension of that, if you think even just 5 years ago, there was a whole notion of I'm offline, right? I'm going to the grocery store, I'm offline, or I'm going to go visit my kid, I'm offline. Well, now, because we always carry these devices that are always connected, you're never truly offline. You're kind of online. And when you think about your applications, where before you were really thinking about these offline, online scenarios, now you tend to be online more often. You still need error testing for times where like connections drop or you really are in a dead spot. But for the most part, people are online. So when we think of consumerization of IT, it's really how do the everyday consumers bring what they use in their own personal lives and carry that into their work environments. And as a result of that, from a development perspective, it changes the type of apps we're developing and the context in which those apps run in. The second part is around business agility, right? So we all know, and I'm sure all of you can relate to this, and anyone who can't relate to this, I would love to see your hands so that way I can find out how I could get that for myself. This whole notion of something's going on, your boss comes into your office, and they're like, we need this big, huge infrastructure application thing, and we need it tomorrow. How many of you have never experienced this? No hands went up. Okay, just as I expected. It's good to know that everywhere else works the same way as Microsoft, and everything is needed tomorrow if you're lucky, if not today. So a lot of people need this business agility. And in the past, I could think about when I used to work on a Live ID, now known as Microsoft account, there was times where you really need to scale up your service. And when you went to scale up your service, you had to go procure some servers, and then you had to rack them. And then once they were racked, then you had to get your software on them, and you had to test them. And all these things required long lead times. And it ended up in a lot of wasted infrastructure. But now when you think about things like cloud services, not only am I able to get infrastructure kind of on demand, but even some of the services I need, I could just tap the cloud and use a web service out there to add additional functionality to my app. So once again, we're seeing that change there. And then kind of with that, we also get this notion of big data, right? And with big data, many of you may be thinking, well, we've always handled lots of data. This is nothing really new, right? And that's partially true. But the thing is, a lot of the data we use has always been in a more structured context, right? Now that people are mining log files, for example, from e-commerce sites to get more value out of those things, we're seeing a lot more unstructured data. So the key thing is, now that you have all this data, right, how do you make use of it, right? You don't want to just generate a bunch of reports that at the end of the day derive no business value and mean nothing, right? You want a way that you could get your structured data and your unstructured data and use them in a more meaningful way. So when we think of these four things, kind of this new business agility and also the consumerization of IT, we could clearly see that application development is changing quite a bit. So that led us to what we call the modern application. And a modern application really consists of three things. One is that they're user-centric. And by user-centric, it goes back to what I was talking about before with my own personal anecdote of carrying my cell phone with me everywhere, right? Is that the fact that I'm also using my personal devices, my work and personal lives are blurring a lot. So on my cell phone, for example, a few weeks ago, I was over in Dubai for a work trip, and I'd use my Skype on my cell phone to talk to my family, but I would also use Link on my cell phone to talk to my coworkers here in Redmond. And they just blurred, right? It never really made a difference to me who it was or changed the context. It was all from my single device. So the apps have become a lot more user-centric. The other aspect with that as well is they become a lot more social, right? And most people, when they think of social, they say, okay, you know, I'm going to send a tweet or I'm going to post to my friends on Facebook that, you know, I'm here and I got 2010 and 2008 as the version products wrong and all that stuff. But it's actually a lot more than that, right? It's this whole fact that kind of with your coworkers, the fact that you're always on means that there's always a connection, right? You never know when you're going to get inspiration about something, and you're going to use something like Yammer or your email or your Messenger or whatever it may be to then communicate with your coworkers. And the third aspect of it is it's really data-centric. So if you think of your line of business applications that you write today, right, kind of your forms over data, right, they were really about data, and that still continues to today. Except the only thing is that we have a lot more data, right? So how do you structure your data and your apps in a way that the data actually becomes useful and just doesn't start becoming a bombarding of stuff? So that's the three pieces when we think of kind of your modern applications. And with your modern applications, you'll notice that we have both business apps and consumer apps together because they blur and they live on the same type of devices. And with that, the other thing that's changed as well is that in the past, where you might say, you know, we need this new customer relations management app, and we're going to go out for 2-3 years and develop it, those days are kind of over, right? People are saying, we want these apps, we need them now, and we expect them now. So what happens from a development engineering process is that we develop these apps, but they're not completely finished. They continuously evolve, and that's where you see kind of this continuous improvement cycle going around. So when we look at these things and we see the trends, and we see the type of application that are developing, these so-called modern applications, we then went and developed Visual Studio 2012. And we think of this as the way to enable the modern application. And you're going to hear a lot of stuff today. You're going to see a lot of different technologies. But if there's only two things that everybody's going to remember here, and there's a quiz if you want some candy. Just kidding. This isn't school. But there's two things I want everybody to remember, right? One is that Visual Studio 2012 is a great way to develop modern applications. And that two, that these often require a new style of life cycle, something that's more agile, and we'll support you in those as well. So we think of it as supporting you end-to-end in your development. I should even ask, how many of you in this room help develop software, but you do not write code? Okay, so we have a few people. Don't be shy if there's other ones. You can put up your hand as well. But in the case of Visual Studio 2012, the way I kind of think of it is, I don't think of it as a tool. I think of it more as a solution. And what it really does is it helps everybody throughout the product cycle, whether you're the architects, whether you're the developers, whether you're the testers, whether you're a business analyst gathering requirements and providing feedback. We have something for you throughout this entire product. So it's actually some pretty cool stuff. So we talked a bit about modern applications, and for all the devs in the room, you're probably like, this trend stuff's cool, but I want to know something about some architecture. I want to see some code. I want to play with the IDE. So let's actually get a little closer to that. And let's start off with kind of how we think of the composition of a modern application. So we start off with kind of our base level. This is the base level all the way down here. And I won't run across. This is a pretty big screen. But you can see that kind of the part in green consists of stuff that's both on-premise and off-premise, right? But the key thing that we care about is that from a user perspective, and actually not even just from a user perspective, but from an operations or a developer perspective, it should actually be pretty seamless, right? You often hear people throw terms like private cloud and public cloud. And today, earlier today, Satya's keynote, they talked a lot about cloud. And I should probably ask, how many of you even know what a private cloud is? Okay, so quite a few people, so I won't go digging into that. But the key thing we want to make sure is that you have that cloud-like abilities both on and off premise. And kind of with that, because your infrastructure now sits in two or more physically different places, right, you want to play that a way that you can seamlessly manage that. So you want a unified management layer. And then kind of even beyond that, when you think about the people who are using your applications, right, we have this whole notion of the connected devices, right? And this is what I was getting at when I was talking about the cell phone, which is people are always connected to your business logic and your business services sitting in your back end. And how do they get access to what sits there, right? It's really through web APIs and this whole API infrastructure. And we're seeing an explosion of API development today. It seems that almost every new web service that comes out includes an API set. So what you could see, for example, and you'll notice that we also included social over in the corner, is that no longer is an application really about just calling your own backend services, but maybe you're incorporating Twitter or Facebook or maybe even something from Bing. Maybe you have Bing Maps included or you have additional search functionality. So you're able to add additional services to your application to create something even more compelling, and that's handled through this API layer. So you can see here when we think of the modern application, if we rewind back and we think about Win32 apps, right, where you created a monolithic app that you kind of just deployed with an MSI and you installed your EXE on your operating system, we see things have evolved a bit, and now we see that the application extends beyond just the OS, but kind of into the cloud as well. So what does that mean from a core technologies perspective? Well, we'll start off once again at kind of the infrastructure layer. And you'll notice that a lot of the technologies are kind of parallel to each other, whether you're on-premise or off-premise, right? If you're in the cloud, you have Windows Azure. But if you're on-premise, you have Windows Server or even Hyper-V. If you need databases, you have SQL Server or you have SQL Azure. SharePoint or SharePoint Online. And we intentionally try to make developing for these platforms as consistent as possible. So that way, as you switch from one platform to another, it becomes a lot easier. So for example, yesterday they talked a lot about if you're developing Windows Phone 8 apps, you could also leverage a lot of that same code to write Windows 8 apps as well. So it's this whole notion of not wasting your time writing code over and over and over again, but being able to leverage a lot of your code in kind of different contexts. We have System Center, kind of that unifying layer. And then with that is kind of Visual Studio and the .NET framework, right? And these are the tools and solutions and where we're going to spend the rest of this talk really kind of focused on. And then from there, you develop the apps that could run on PCs, on tablets, on phones. You'll notice kind of the first three icons on the very top row are really Windows devices. But at the same time, kind of with HTML5, it gives you further extension into non-Microsoft platforms. Because we also realize that many of you live in heterogeneous environments, where some coworkers might be using Macs, others might be using Linux, others are on Windows. So we recognize there's a variety of platforms that people are developing for. So we want to help you guys out and help you make the right technology decisions. So when we think of continuous services, right? So actually, let me go back one step. So the one thing I want to call out here is that you see the title is kind of connected devices and continuous services. So the way I'm going to break down kind of the rest of this talk and some of the demos we're going to do is I'm going to divide it across the two. So I'm going to actually focus first on how do we develop these services, and then from there, kind of what are the connected devices that then go and consume them. So we see here that with continuous services, many of you may have some of these in place already, right? Some of you may have multi-tiered infrastructure. Some of you may have SOA or kind of services-based architectures. You may be running web apps as well. And the core technologies that we use is really through the .NET framework, right? How many of you today develop web apps, just out of curiosity? Okay, so quite a few people. Do you guys write them in ASP.NET? Okay, so we're seeing quite a few hands. So ASP.NET is a great technology that we have for that. I'll talk a bit about that. We've also added additional infrastructure for web APIs, right? We want to make it a lot easier for you to create APIs. We don't want it to be as painful as they might have been historically. We want you to be able to expose the data you need to. And then also we know that managing data is tough, as I was talking about earlier today, and that's where kind of the entity framework comes in. So you've heard me talk a lot. How many people want to see a demo? Come on, how many people want to see a demo? Okay, all right. All right, so let's jump into this. See if I can remember all the different buttons I need to press. There we go. So the first thing I'm going to do, so I often think the best way to show a technology is to really show it in the context of kind of an application. So all of us are here at Build, and many of us attend events. So what I want to develop is really an end-to-end event app, one that helps people that are trying to figure out what event to go to, go over the web and find the information they need. But then also to help organizers and attendees, once they've arrived at an event, right, have the information that they need in the context that they work in order to get things going. So I'm going to start off here, and this is a regular just a My Events app. We could go through, we see a list of events that are happening throughout the world. The event I'm interested in is this December 12th one in Seattle. So I'll just go and click on that. So it shows up. A few things I want to point out. We have some of the standard information you would expect. So for example, we have the event, the date, we have a description of it. So these are all things that would be generated from my own staff, and they would put this information in. But also, I was able to leverage technologies from elsewhere. So for example, to make sure people don't get lost, we've actually included a map from Bing, right? So instead of having to go out and figure out how am I going to develop maps, I could just contact the Bing map service and incorporate their maps directly into my app. The other thing is I want to know kind of what people are saying about Visual Studio. So I'm also able to go and incorporate Twitter information, so that way I could feed that in. So you could see that really as a developer, the only thing I'm really focusing on is only the code that I could write, and then I could leverage the cloud for the services that sit out there to make my app that much better. So I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this app, and it's looking pretty cool. But the one thing I'm wondering about is, how do I go about building something like this? Well, all of you know that apps really start with data. So let's go into Visual Studio, and we'll jump in here. And this is actually a solution that I inherited from somebody else. This isn't something that I started with from scratch. And often, when you get a new piece of code, one of the hardest things to do is to figure out where everything is. And you end up wasting a lot of time trying to find the different pieces of code. Well, actually, here we included a new option, Search Solution Explorer, which will search across my entire solution. So in this case, I'm interested in how speakers were implemented, so I'll enter that. And you'll notice that not only does it search at the file level, but it will also search at classes and different properties within my solution. So that way, I'm getting a really comprehensive search. So I'll go through here. I see I have a few options. That's what I want, speaker.cs. So I'm looking at it, and the first thing you may notice is there's actually nothing special about this class whatsoever. It's actually a plain old CLR class, or POCO for short. And the reason why we were able to do data management with such a simple class is because we're taking advantage of the Entity Framework. And how many people in this room actually use Entity Framework today? Okay, so there's quite a few people. For those of you who do not use Entity Framework, what it enables you to do is it enables you to do code-first development. So actually what I did here, or the person who created this solution, was they actually just went in and created the different classes they needed, and then used Entity Framework to develop all the management and relationships between different objects and classes within the application, really simplifying the development experience. So we've gone through here, taking a look at this. This is looking pretty good. But the other thing I know is that once I have my data, the next key thing is really then how do I expose it, right? And most of the time, you would do that through an API. And sometimes one of the issues with APIs is that you have to go through and you got to figure out, okay, what are the different put, post, delete that I want to do, get? Also, how do I do the routes and all that other stuff? Well, one cool thing we actually included with the .NET framework is the API controller. So you can see right here. So just by inheriting the API controller, it actually creates a lot of the APIs using the regular HTTP verbs like get, put, post, delete, right? And really just exposes a lot of the information for me. So that way, the only work I need to do is if I need to do any additional tweaking on the APIs, I could then go through and just do that myself, but everything else is handled for me. So this is looking pretty good. I got my APIs. But what I'm really curious about then is, well, how is this really being consumed? So if I go back and I take a look at my application, and let's just say I'm going to go and manage events, I can see that I have a list of events. Once again, this is really just calling my web service and pulling all the information out through an API. I'll go through and I'll take a look at my sessions. And let's go and just manage the schedule. I can see I have a list of sessions across a variety of rooms. Well, kind of one of the key things is that there's a lunch break, and I always like to eat, so I'm going to go and just grab my lunch break, and I could just drag and drop it. And let's just say we're going to do it at 10 in room 2. So I could just drag and drop it, and many of you are familiar with this type of experience, right? It's really just Ajax, asynchronous, JavaScript, and XML, and you'll notice that I'm able to drag and drop things and just leave them, and they automatically save and they update in the back end, right? So these are the type of experiences that users are now, before used to be really cool, but all of you are looking at it like, yeah, I do this every day. This is kind of the new norm. This is what people are expecting. So if I take a look at Visual Studio to figure out, okay, well, what's going on behind the scenes? Well, I know that it's Ajax, so I'll go and I'll take a look at my file. We can see here that I have my Ajax code, and this is being used to call the APIs that then do the saving or whatever your operation is. But the cool thing with 2012 is that we've done enhanced support for JavaScript and jQuery, because we also realize that a lot of people now aren't really writing all their JavaScript from scratch. They're actually taking advantage of jQuery to do a lot of their development. So if I go here and I just do $get JSON, you'll notice that the IntelliSense is kicking in, everything's showing up. So for those of you who are doing web development within Visual Studio 2012, you'll see that JavaScript is actually a first-class citizen. So a lot of the things that you do today with C# and VB, and by do today I mean kind of from an editor perspective, not necessarily from a language perspective, you're able to do the exact same thing here, as you notice that. So that's coming in, so that's looking good. I'm liking it. But the other thing, too, is that we know that HTML is evolving a lot. So you may remember in the beginning I talked a lot about HTML5. Well, we know that not every browser is HTML5 compliant, and we know that not all apps are in HTML5. But if you're writing across different standards, sometimes you can forget what belongs to one language and then release stuff that's just not standards compliant. So if I go back and I take a look at my layout, you'll notice right up top I have the HTML5 doc type. And the other thing I'd like to call out is if you take a look right here, I actually have HTML5 as my doc type. So what's happening is that Visual Studio is actually taking a look at my code. It's recognizing what standard of HTML I'm using, and as a result of that, it enables me to do a lot of validation. So for example, you'll see here that I have a header node. I also have a section node. So these are very specific to HTML5. So if I go through here, and let's say I want to do HTML4 transitional. Bring that in. So it's gone there. The first thing you may notice is that right up top, without me pressing anything else, we actually saw that it's actually changed the standard. And because it's changed that standard, if I go back, let me scroll down a bit, you'll notice now that I have a validation error under my header and my section, right? So this is a very easy way that as I'm coding, that I could spot these type of errors very quickly. So let me go through and fix that back. Recognizing that it's HTML5, so that's looking pretty good. But the other problem, too, and whenever I do web development, I really hate this a lot, is really browser compatibility, right? Doesn't browser compatibility suck? Okay, I guess some people like testing across like 5 different browsers every time they write code. But for me, I hate it, right? I really wish that it was very simple for me to test all these different browsers kind of at one time. And although we don't have the super browser that enables you to do all of that, one cool feature that we include in Visual Studio 2012 is actually the ability to debug across any browser that you have installed on your machine, right? So the cool thing with this is that you could make a change that you're like, you know, I think this is going to fix the bug that I'm seeing in Internet Explorer, but I think it might break it in Chrome, right? I could actually just go through, change which browser I'm looking at, and say, okay, I'm going to use Chrome, and then go through an F5 and do my testing there and then switch it back. So just once again, kind of a little fit and finish thing that makes things a lot easier. As you look through this list, does anybody see a browser that they're not familiar with listed here? Okay, so I hear the rumbling. So Page Inspector, that's correct. So Page Inspector is kind of a new thing, and it's actually pretty powerful. And I'll just go and select that. How many people have used the F12 developer tools within Internet Explorer? So quite a few people have. So this actually gives you the power of that, but on steroids, right? You actually get a lot more functionality with this. So I'm going to actually go and just kick that off. And what Page Inspector will do is it will actually bring up my application, but instead of launching it in a separate browser, it's actually going to bring it up within Visual Studio. And the cool thing with actually bringing it up within Visual Studio is that it enables me to do a lot of things that I couldn't do otherwise. If I just go and just clean this up a bit. So you can see here that I have my same application that we're looking at in the browser, right here. I could see that I have my DOM down below, but I'm going to click Inspect, right? So right now you're thinking, this is all the exact same stuff that I get within the F12 developer tools. But there is one key difference, right? Often when you're trying to figure out UI problems in your web apps, the biggest issue you get is that you can get it at the client level, so you can see kind of what's rendering within the browser and you can fix those things. But you often get stuck, especially if you're someone like me who uses a lot of the MVC pattern, on figuring out what's the exact line of code all the way down on the server that resulted in kind of the UI I'm looking at now, right? And how do I go about tweaking that and fixing that? Well, actually, I could just go now, and that you'll notice that as I scroll over my application, I'm actually getting a dynamic code view update on the right-hand side, which is bringing me to the exact lines of code on the server that are used for rendering what I'm looking at. So I can look through here. I see a lot of cool things. But I see that there's actually a bug. It says, you know, hi, Jason. But the problem is my name is not Jason. It's Orville, right? So what's going on here? So I clicked on it, and I could see from my dynamic code layout that actually was hard-coded, right? Somebody had hard-coded this information in for their own demo and testing purposes. So I could just go, and let me go and delete that. And then I'll scroll a little further down. And this looks like it's the real code, so I'll just uncomment that and bring it back in. Let's look it over. It looks about right. So I'm just going to go and save that. And when I went to save that, you may have noticed something. It was really fast, so you might have missed it. But kind of over here in this message bar within the Page Inspector, it actually changed to say, hey, your source code has changed. Do you want to refresh this? And the reason why we're able to do that, and I'll just click on that and let it refresh. The reason why we're able to do that is because you have both your client and your server running together within Visual Studio. So we're able to view what's going on end to end. And you can see that by me now clicking on it, I could go and the bug has been fixed, right? And before Page Inspector, right, what you would have to do is you'd find it in your browser, then you'd have to poke through your code and you change here, go back, code here, change back, a lot of round tripping. And it was really hard to find these type of issues. And you can see here that literally just in a matter of seconds, I was able to find the problem, fix it, move on, and do whatever else I need to do. So that's some pretty cool stuff. So I like Page Inspector. I'm a big fan of it. For those of you who do web development, especially if you do it within Visual Studio, I highly recommend that you go out and give it a try. So we've gone through, we've created this app, everything's looking good. But the other thing too is I actually want to take advantage of the cloud, right? I want to deploy this out and not only have to do it kind of all with on my machine. So in the past, what you would have to do is you'd go to the Azure portal and you'd get a bunch of credential information, then you copy and paste some information here, and then you go back to the portal and you'd be back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. And how many people actually use cloud technologies today? Hey, there's a few people. Of all of you who do cloud technologies, how many of you are doing them on Azure? Okay, so it looks like most of the people. Okay, so you already know about this round tripping and stuff like that. Well, we've actually made a lot of improvements with this release. And what we're now able to do is I could just go and right click, and then when I go to publish, we see that it comes up. And I have the option of just downloading my profile information. And when I download the profile information, it includes all the information I need to upload my code to Azure. So once that happens, I go through, I have all my connection information, I have my different settings, I could tweak the database I want to connect to, do a quick preview to make sure everything works, one click off to Azure, in a matter of moments, it's already deployed. So you can see that we really simplified things and did a lot to really make that easier. So we've done a lot with this app, it's looking pretty cool, but there's still kind of one thing missing, right? I know that some people are coming in on mobile browsers. And what I'm curious about is like, well, how can I make sure that my app looks good in those contexts as well? So let me just go through, and I'm going to just switch this out to Internet Explorer. Bring that up. And the thing I want to check for now, once my app gets up and running, is I'm going to resize my browser and see if it's going to look kind of good when I go and change things out. Go through here, just coming in. So there's my application. I'm just going to go and grab it. Let's go resize. It's looking good. It's looking good. And we see there it's not quite looking good. So we can see that we end up with scrolling. And any person who's used a website that requires scrolling on a browser knows that it absolutely sucks, right? Because you have small real estate already, and you can't fit everything in, or you're trying to squeeze it and it becomes too small to read. So really what I want to do is I want to be able to have a view that's more optimized for mobile. Well, if you're taking advantage of ASP.NET, one of the cool things you could do is you could have multiple views. So instead of just having a desktop view alone, you could actually create a mobile view as well. So you can go and you can create this mobile view, but the one problem you have is that unless you have an emulator on your machine, you might not necessarily be able to test this new view. Well, one of the cool things is that there's a lot of code share between Visual Studio and the IE F12 developer tools. So we can see just down here on the bottom, I have a list of things. I have a change user agent string. And I could actually go and simulate different types of browsers. So in this case, I'm going to choose IE for Windows Phone. I'm going to size this to kind of where I think a mobile phone would look like. And I'll just go and refresh the page. And now when it goes through, it actually brings up my mobile view. And you can see here that I just have a new view. So you can see very quickly how within Visual Studio, we've included a lot of great things to make a lot of your web development that much easier, right? So you can see that we've covered quite a few things, right? We've covered kind of how you create the APIs, how you streamline managing your data, how you could bug your websites from not only the client side, but all the way through to the server, and then make them available across a variety of devices. So that's it kind of on the services side. So as we go through and we start to think about connected devices, as I mentioned before, people are coming in off a variety of devices. It's no longer just standard IT issued stuff. So we see not only do we have the desktop, but we see on the desktop, there's two types of apps, right? For those people who are using Windows 8, and actually, how many people are using Windows 8 already? Okay, this is good, quite a few people. How many of you are thinking about developing apps for Windows 8? Okay, so this is good. So got a good traction. Makes sense, we're at build. I would hope that you would really be digging into that type of stuff. Well, you have these two flavor of apps, right? And kind of like, how do you manage those and how do you develop for them? And do you necessarily need to rewrite your app from scratch, right? So we'll dig into that a bit. Also with Windows Phone, we know that people are coming on the phone app, so that provides a different context. And then as I showed already, people are coming in off of browsers, right? So now you're seeing that for one app, you now have a multitude of different endpoints, right? And managing endpoints always sucks. Nobody really likes doing that. So the key thing is, well, how do we manage that? So let's actually jump back in. And let's take a look at another demo. So we're going to go back to my good friend Visual Studio. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm actually going to create an app that's really targeted towards organizers, right? And the key thing with an organizer, right, and the thing you have to remember is that a lot of these apps depend on the context that you're working, right? When you're organizing an event, it's really about a lot of data entry, right? And best place for data entry is at your desk, right? You have your desktop, you have your keyboard. So how do we develop an app that's best for them? If you're a WPF developer, this looks very familiar to you, right? You're seeing it's just simple XAML. But actually what we included within Visual Studio is actually the Blend Designer. So that's actually built right in. So we're now using the same technology. So I'm going to go and I'm going to launch this app. So it's going to go through. I'll just resize it. You can see it's just a regular WPF app. I have a list of a variety of information, so once again, pulling in from different sources. But the one thing organizers care a lot about is this ability to figure out kind of what are people interested in, right? What are the top things that are in the discussion? So I'll go through and I'll just click on top tags. And I'll try to move my app. And you'll notice that it didn't move. It's hanging, right? So what we're doing is we're actually encountering a performance issue. And I remember when I used to do performance and scalability, one of the things I really hated about perf issues is that they're really hard to find, right? They're probably spread out across a wide variety of pieces of code, and that you're sitting there and you're probing and you're probing and you have the whole team involved. You finally find the bug, right? Everybody's excited, you're high-fiving each other, everyone feels good, and then reality sets in. You got to fix the damn thing. Oh, I don't know if I can say that. You got to fix that darn bug, right? So you go through and you get that thing fixed, or you want to get it fixed, but you realize that the test hit, the regression hit, might be months of work. And then going from, let's do the right thing and fix the bug, you're now having a conversation on, is it worth even fixing? Can we live with it? And all of a sudden, you're forced into this world of mediocre code, which none of us like to write. So let's go through and actually let's take a look at kind of what's going on behind the scenes. So we can see here that I have this method called reload top tags. And when I click the refresh button, it actually calls this, right? And right now what I'm doing is I'm actually calling this code in a very synchronous way, right? And many of you are familiar with this. It's just our standard way we develop. And what I would like to do is I'd actually like to re-architect it to make it asynchronous. And often when you write asynchronous code, it requires you to really do a lot of re-architecting and kind of tracking things. And it becomes very hairy, complicated code. And it becomes very difficult to track. But what we could do here is I'm actually going to go and just comment this out. And for those of you who like shortcut keys, I'm going to let you in on a little trick. So the way I was able to comment that out very quickly was our Control-K, Control-C, kind of all at once. And if I want to uncomment the next line, it's just Control-K, Control-U. Right? So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to bring in another piece of code to make an asynchronous call. So we'll go down here and we'll take a look at the method. And actually, in the meantime, I'll just kick this off to run. I hate when that happens. Go like that. And you can see here we take advantage of really two new keywords, right? The async and await. And what that does is when we compile our application with this, it tells it that this is an asynchronous operation. So what you need to do now is actually just go in and just let the app continue to run while we await for the code to finish and then display it. So we could go here, we see our application, go through and just click refresh. I could actually just go and move my application around. And you can see that it worked, right? So once again, really streamlining kind of how we develop applications and making it a lot easier to do. So we go through here. So we saw that we changed that. But the other thing, too, is that we know that organizers for events aren't always just sitting kind of at their desk, right? They're taking advantage of tablets, and they're being on the go. And many of you can't see this, but right over here, I have a tablet. And I'll actually go and switch over to that. And I have a list of different applications. Is this showing? Yeah, great. So I'll go through. I'll just click on my organizer app. So as you remember before, I developed this kind of continuous service, right? So what I'm able to do now is I'm actually able to have the same type of thing on a tablet. But because a tablet is a touch-based interface, right, this makes it better for just recalling information. So I could just go through. I could click on different things. I'll go through. I'm pulling in kind of comments and attendees. So I'm able to go and create an app that the organizers could use while they're on the go. So many people today, if they were to develop such a thing, would probably have two separate code bases to develop both of these applications, which really sucks. What I really want to do is I actually want to just be able to re-leverage my code as I move from place to place. Well, the first app was actually a WPF app with C# behind it. And you can see here that with Windows 8, it's also a WPF app, right? So nothing much has changed. You see the XAML, you see the skills kind of, it's not a WPF app. My apologies for that. But it is a XAML app written in .NET. So you could see that happening there. But the thing you may still be wondering is, well, what about the business logic, right? That's the painful part to have to write it, to test it, to maintain two separate code bases. Well, one cool thing that we've introduced is actually this notion of portable libraries. So if I go here, and I could zoom in, as I develop my business logic, I could actually encapsulate it in one piece of code and create this portable library, right? And the big advantage of the portable library is that I could then share it across my different applications. So in this case, even though I have an organizer app that sits on my desktop and then another one that sits on the tablet, behind the scenes, it's actually the exact same code. And the only changes is really kind of at the UI layer, anything specific that I'm doing to take advantage of device capabilities. So once again, we're really trying to streamline the development process and make it a lot easier for you to get kind of up and running and get your applications going. So we kind of have that. That's looking good. But the one thing I know is that attendees, they're getting a little jealous, right? They want to have a cool application for themselves as well. So I'm going to go through, and I'm going to go and take a look at my attendee app. You can see that it's actually a pretty similar app. Once again, it runs on a tablet because in this case, I'm assuming a lot of people are carrying these around with them. I'll go through and I'll click on it. And it looked like I logged out. So let me just log back in. Let me not fat finger it. Hopefully all of you did not copy my password as I was doing it. Try this one more time. There we go. So I could go in, I could take a look at my app. I'll pull through once again. I'm able to leverage data from other sources, so you could see that I have Bing Maps in there. I get a lot of useful information, so I could go in, I could take a look at a session. I could pull in comments and other things like that. But another cool thing is that often when I'm at events like this, right, Many people have notes. I'm looking around. I'm seeing a lot of people actually writing on tablets. Wouldn't it be really awesome if you had a capability to just go and view the notes that other people have written? So on this particular app, there is actually that capability. So I have these notes, and I can kind of just scroll through, and I could see kind of what different people are saying, right? So this is actually pretty cool. This is something that I want people to use, but the UI isn't quite right. I would actually like to go and tweak that. So often when people are working on UIs, they want it to be pixel perfect. So how many people here have actually taken advantage of Expression Blend in the past? Okay, so there is quite a few people. So right now we've actually incorporated it directly into Visual Studio. So I could actually just go through and I could say, let me just go and open my project in Blend, right? So we see that we have Blend for Visual Studio. It's going to come up and it's going to load my application. And one problem we find with a whole class of UI bugs is that the only way you could truly find them is if your application's running. So we've actually included a new mode, and I'll actually resize this so you guys can see it a little better. Is we actually have this interactive mode. So I'm going to go and I'm going to select that. And in interactive mode, what it does is it actually enables me to interact with the application. So I'm going to go through, and I could actually pull up the information like I did before. And actually up here, I think I want to resize this. If I could get my selection properly. I know it's on. I'm going to kick out of interactive mode for a second. Let me go back in. And you can see that I could just actually just go in, and I could actually just move things as I please. And I could just go and resize my UI. And then when I'm finished with that, I actually just get back into interactive mode and continue playing with my app. So once again, just like we saw with websites where you were able to go in and able to tweak it and kind of make it meet the needs and find bugs easily, on the UI class of bugs, we help you with that as well using Blend within Visual Studio. So we have that going, so that's looking great. But the one thing I'm still wondering about is this paper thing, right? So we all went and we took a look at this paper. I want to see how easy it is to write something on that. So I'm going to go and I'm going to bring up my paper app. I wrote Hi Build. Does anybody want me to write anything? Does anybody want me to give a shout out to their wife or husband or kid or anything? Okay, we'll just say Happy Halloween. How about that? So here I am. I'm just using a little stylus. So I'm just going to go through. I'm going to write Happy. And you can tell I spent a lot of time typing because my penmanship isn't the best. So we'll go through that. So I've written down, you know, many of you in this room are writing notes too, so that's okay. But the thing with paper, there's a few things I could do with it that normally you can't do, but I'm actually going to try that here. So you could rotate it. We'll grab that, so we're going to move that around. And notice how responsive that is. I'm actually controlling this with my finger. I could actually make it move. So if I just go through and I click that, you guys can see that. So we can see it moving. And notice how lifelike it looks, right? It's really moving almost like it was real paper, like a magic carpet. All the letters are changing with it. So to get this type of performance, especially for those of you who develop games or something need something really performant, right, there's C++. And we've actually included a lot of great tools within Visual Studio 2012 to help you with your C++ development. So if I go back here to Visual Studio, now I'm going to go and I'm actually going to bring up my journal app. And I actually want to go and I want to debug this thing. So I'm going to go through, I'm going to look at my graphics, and I'm going to do start diagnostics. And for those of you who do not have a tablet but you like to simulate a tablet experience, I'm actually just going to go and take advantage of the simulator that's included with me with Visual Studio. And with it, there's a few options. I could change my location, I could look at different resolutions. But in this case, I'm just going to take advantage of touch, so I'll grab the paper. You can see I'm moving it. It looks pretty lifelike, almost like it's real paper. And I'm just going to go and capture that for a second. So I'll do a print screen. With that finished, I'll actually just go back and take a look here. And now everything is resizing, so it's kind of hard to see a few things. There we go. I'll just go and click on a pixel. I can see that I have my pixel history. Click there, and let's just take a look at our graphics pipeline. How's this looking for all of you up there? Okay, this is a little compressed, but we'll try to get through it. I could see the different transformations that my image is going through. So I could look at my input assembler. I could look at my vertex shader. And kind of with that, I could actually even dig in even further. And I could actually find the exact line of code that's used for rendering that pixel. And I could actually just go through then and just step through my code and find out exactly what's going on. So you can see that kind of within Visual Studio 2012. And I know that I just showed you guys a lot of stuff and it was a real whirlwind. But we really enable you to kind of create a wide variety of applications and step through them. And I'll be the first to admit that this is strictly like, this isn't even skimming the surface. This is almost like flying over the surface, just showing you broadly kind of what's available. So I highly recommend that you go and you explore a bit further, right? So when you're developing these class of applications, right, we talk a lot about a new life cycle. And I don't know how many of you got to catch Brian Keller's talk earlier today, but he talks a lot about this life cycle where there's kind of this continuous feedback, continuous quality, and continuous delivery, which we really think of as define, develop, and operate. And kind of with that, we know that within that, there's a lot of things involved with your development and a lot of problems that you encounter. So for example, when you're defining your application, there's often misunderstood requirements, conflicting priorities. Well, we've actually included some cool things like storyboarding, which help you mock up your app in advance and share it with people. So that way, you could get direct feedback on what your app will look like and function like before you even write a line of code, so you don't end up wasting a lot of time. And also when you go and you develop things, there's a lot of interruptions, right? You get a loss of focus. Sometimes you rush so much that quality becomes an afterthought. And as a result of that, you end up developing a poor application. Well, we include a lot of great things to help improve productivity. For example, like shelf sets, for example, that enables you to kind of save your state and then come back to it afterwards. And even when you operate your apps, right, this whole notion of like developers and operations working kind of hand in hand together to develop your apps, right, we include a lot of things to kind of streamline that. That, and then we talk a bit about Team Foundation Service. So a few final things to wrap up, and then I'll open it up for questions, is the first thing I want everybody to note is that we're continuing to develop a lot of things. So you're going to continue to see updates from us on a continuous basis. So even though we have our big releases, for those of you who are MSDN subscribers, you can expect to see some new things in the near future. The other thing, too, is that when we think of the three pillars, remember that Visual Studio really helps you as far as developing your modern applications. We give you the lifecycle tools to help you manage them. And that also, we continuously deliver value because we'll continue to release things through MSDN. There's a few related sessions. All of these are tomorrow. There was some great ones today and yesterday. But these are the ones for tomorrow, so definitely go and check those out. I want to thank you in advance for coming. There's candy up front, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.